Hi everyone, my name is Mike and I am an alcoholic.
Hey Mike.
Hey Mike.
Welcome to those that showed up this evening. I guess just first off a little bit about Bill and I and why we're here. And I guess the first thing I want to say is that this is not a regular AA meeting. Anyone who has a desire to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, as outlined in the big book, they're welcome to come. We didn't really want to call it a workshop, so we decided to call it a work group. And you know, because it is a work group and it's not a regular meeting, theoretically we don't really have to abide by the traditions. So once we get underway and we have our little group established and stuff, there may be guidelines just for the group. You know, no hard and fast rules, but as a collective group and a spiritual body, we will have guidelines. It's funny, Bill and I went on a retreat about a month ago in Vermont, and coming out of that retreat, I had such a strong experience. I had made the comment that I wasn't working with as many people as I had been in the past. They just weren't coming for whatever reason. And I walked up to Bill right after the retreat, and I said, "We got to get something started, you know. And what I'd like to do is get it started right in my local town." And of course, this is the second thing that I've done in the past 2.5 years. Right down the street from my house, and I don't think there's anyone from West Orange here, but of course that's okay. Oh, okay, great, good. Then the flyer did. Yeah. Rewind tape. But one of my, I guess, I don't want to use the word hopes, but I guess one of my motivations was to try to. Bill and I belong to a home group in Berkeley Heights, and I guess one of my desires is to try to get the message that group carries more around this area. I've been living here for about 3 or 4 years now, and I haven't really even centered myself in meetings around here. You know, my home group is still in Berkeley Heights, and so I guess in a way this is to kind of center myself here, and also to help anyone who wants to go through the steps, and that's first and foremost. You want to say something?
My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Actually, that wasn't funny when you came to me and said you wanted to start a group. He said it was kind of funny. I guess I am working with a lot of people right now. But our home group has been doing big book studies for, I guess, 9 years now. And both for one of us has been involved with them for probably about 5 years. And we just kind of, not only do we do this in our own as well as other people's living rooms, but we just thought we'd create a little group to kind of, in an informal way, just have an opportunity to just hang out and let's go through the big book, and perhaps we'll experience it together and we'll share insights and So, you know, like Mike said, this isn't a normal meeting with its, you know, I don't want to say rigidness because it's not rigid at all, but, you know, it's just a little bit different. We don't necessarily want it to be the same as a regular meeting. But, you know, again, we've been studying this book for a while, and we've learned certain things that we've put into practical application. Both of us, as well as I guess a whole bunch of us, believe in going through the steps again and again, and it's kind of settled down to probably about once a year at least. And last year we went through the steps just before we did a workshop in October, and now we are just kind of thinking it's time to go through the steps again. Not necessarily as the result of anything happening or our lives falling apart, but just it seemed like this would be a good time to start up again. And instead of necessarily doing it one-on-one with somebody in their living room or whatever, we just thought we'd throw out a flyer and let's see who shows up. And, you know, there's a few people that weren't able to make it the first week and a few people that said they would. And, you know, there just seemed to be enough interest, so we just figured, let's go for it. So I guess we kind of talked about what we wanted to do, and we both kind of just said, I have no idea. And just thought that we would perhaps, you know, kind of just go around the room and introduce ourselves and maybe just let each other know where we're at and maybe just informally or formally decide, you know, what do we want to do with the people that are here and maybe with people also coming, you know, what do we want to do? How do we want to do this? We're pretty much up for anything.
Bill said the statement I made at the retreat wasn't too funny, and I didn't tell you the other half of the story. What is funny now that probably within a week or two coming out of that retreat, I was working with one guy, and he's approaching inventory, and coming out of that retreat, someone called me up from Connecticut. So I'm working with her. I'll be here in a fifth step on Saturday. And then someone from Bill and our friend Carrie had did a big book weekend about a week and a half ago. And Kathy and I also attended that. And coming out of that, I picked up a new protege out of Pennsylvania. So, you know, be careful what you wish for and be careful about starting anything on the fly. So I am working with a few people now.
So now it's funny.
And while you're trying to send yourself in the West Orange, all the new people you're working with, they're not only not in this town, they're not in this state.
Right. I take after my wife in that respect.
Okay.
My wife, comma, Kathy.
Yes,
that's a whole other story in itself.
Comma's so, in your name now?
Don't go there.
Dash and comma?
So I guess what we want to do in the way of introductions and figuring out where we all are is to just go around the table, give our name. Hopefully you can remember all this. Give our name, our home group if you choose to, your sobriety date if you want. But most importantly, have you ever been through all 12 steps, including making all your amends? If so, how many times have you been through the steps? And lastly, what do you expect to get from this work group? Do you have any expectations, any hopes?
And, perhaps even, you know, something that... Excuse me. Thank you. Perhaps even I had thought and it just kind of left me. Even kind of an expectation of, you know, what would you like, what would be the most that you would wish for to get out of this, or, you know, what do you feel is lacking in your application of the steps, or what are you struggling with in trying to carry a message to a new person, or, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, we're not authorities or anything like that. Maybe we can address stuff like that as a group. More than that we as individuals would be able to counsel somebody or something. But, you know, my hope is that we would work together and you know, fill in whatever gaps we feel is lacking or is our current struggles. And that would make this ideal for me, personally.
Lately, what I'm finding out is... a standard question to someone I talk to when I ask them, have you been through the steps? I'll say, did you make all your nine-step amends? Now, you know, there is cases where you can't find the person or whatever. But I mean, have you made all your amends wherever possible. And usually, at least in this area, they'll say, no, I'm stuck on eight, or I started to make a couple amends and I've pooped out or whatever. And I've kind of gotten a knack of asking them immediately after that, well, have you done any work with steps 10 and 11? And invariably, and I'll say the few times that I've asked this question, it's been a wipeout, 100%. Invariably, they will have done no work with steps 10 and 11. And in the big book, it says that once you get into your amends, you immediately start on steps 10 and 11. And I found out that the reason that they either didn't make any amends or they pooped out in their amends is because they didn't take advantage of the power that can be given to us via the 10th and the 11th step. And that's also my experience when I stall out on amends. I also stall out on 10 and 11. So I guess I'll start. Like I said, I'm Mike and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Into Action Big Book Group in Berkeley Heights. My sobriety date is September 27th, 1993. I've been through the steps several times. I think, like Bill mentioned, just the path that we've chosen in Alcoholics Anonymous is to go through the steps on an annually or semi-annual basis. To the best of my knowledge, I'm current with amends. And I really have no expectations from this little work group other than I hope we can get a little body of us together and, of course, experience the miracles that can happen within taking the steps and, also possibly maybe make a few more friends in the fellowship.
That's pretty much my story.
Thank you, Connor.
You're welcome.
My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict.
There you go. My home group's the Monday Night Into Action Big Book Group in Berkeley Heights. As everybody was talking, I was thinking, I remember the first time I went to that meeting. I showed up at this Big Book meeting. I had been sober for 3.5 years, and after the meeting was over, I walked up to the secretary and said, this is my home group. And signed up and haven't stopped going. In 7.5 years. But my sobriety date is June 3rd, 1991. And what else was I just talking about? I've been through the steps. Name, home group, sobriety date. Always. Each day is new. I guess I've been through the steps, I think, about 4 times. For probably about 7 years. Well, for 3.5 years, I didn't go through the steps at all. Then I desperately threw myself into the steps because I was dying. And then I only did the steps that one time until probably about 3 years ago. And then I started going through the steps once a year. And each time I go through the steps, I try to use a different four-step format so I can get a different perspective at how my self-will screws things up, how my ego takes over again. The last time was back in October. I guess we just about finished up last October. I guess up until that point, I made all the amends that I was aware of. I think I might have to make one or two more. One is with my soon-to-be ex-mother-in-law, who lives way down by Cape May. And I guess about a month ago, I called her and wished her happy birthday, but she was like sleeping, and it just didn't seem... I feel uncomfortable about doing an amend over the phone, so I want to run down there, but I haven't. I've been kind of bringing it into meditation and seeing when's the right time, and I'm willing, but I want it to be done right. And
hasn't come up as now. But I, as a matter of fact, in the next couple of months, I'm going to be down there a couple of times, so I'm hoping to take advantage of that. But that's the only one that I'm aware of. I think I had said two, but I think that's the only one that I'm aware of off the top of my head right now. What else are you talking about?
Do you have any expectations?
I don't have any expectations. My expectation is to not have an expectation. There's a part of me that would love to do what I always do, and there's a part of me that would love to do something completely different than I've never done. So I don't really care. I would love to... my only hope and my only mantra whenever I do anything like this is to say to myself or to say to my higher power 100 times that day, may I be of service. That's just where I'm at. And whatever can be most effective for all of us, including myself, is what I want to do, whatever that ends up being. So,
you know, as everyone was talking, I actually realized that I do have one amends to make that I forgot about or just put it in the back vault or whatever. So I guess I want to thank you all for costing me money. And, you know, it never fails. I like the fact that we all seem to have some experience with doing this. It doesn't appear to me that anyone here is brand new and has never cracked the book yet. Of course, I wish some of those people were here too. My intuition says that next week we're probably going to get a couple more people. So Bill and I had discussed that, and we didn't really want to get into anything too heavy tonight. We will cover a couple things in the beginning of the book, but we didn't really want to get into the meat of step one until next week. As far as workshops are concerned, there's a couple things we can do, and again, my hope that anything that we do in this work group is based on the collective consciousness of the group, not just something that Bill comes up with or something that I come up with. You know, kind of let God or the Spirit move through the group and direct us as to how we should go. But through listening to tapes and talking to other people that have done work groups or workshops like this, sometimes they close it off at the fourth step, and once a group gets to inventory, they won't allow anyone new in. Other groups don't do that, and work on the premise that even if someone walks in on the eighth step, they're meant to be there, and that's not going to hurt. You know, that's not going to hurt them. So. I really don't know how we're going to do it. I guess that's up to everyone. And you know, for those of us who inevitably, once you get to inventory, the group sort of splits in half. So that probably means that Bill and I could stay home then. But if the group doesn't get any bigger. But you know what? I like it like this. I feel an intimacy already. And I feel like we all have a common bond and we've barely known each other 45 minutes. I guess the only other thing in the way of Bill and I talking this evening was that we wanted to, unless anybody has anything else, any questions as far as the direction we're going in, we want to talk a little bit about the circle and triangle. If you flip over, Bill was nice enough to put together a sort of a compressed packet compared to what he usually puts together.
Yeah, and I'm happy there's people that haven't seen our product, because for a lot of people, some of these handouts they've seen before, but
I'd like to share. I was in Florida.
What was that?
Also, one other thing I want to bring up, there are a few more flyers, the half-page flyers for this work group. If you just, you know, pick up a couple on your way out and spread around to your local groups, you can make copies if you want. My email address is on there, so if you, you know, if you want me to email it to you, just send me an email or give me a phone call or what have you. Let's stay in touch through the weeks, too. Mm-hmm.
Should we exchange email addresses?
Sure. I would love to. I'm definitely up for that.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I loved about... It was kind of Mike's idea. He kind of gave me partial credit, but it was his idea with calling it a work-study group or a work group, because this isn't necessarily a study and it isn't necessarily a meeting. So, you know, work and group is kind of, I think, ideal and what we're kind of trying to shoot for. So I was really happy with that label or whatever you want to call it, because Mike and I are really very big fans of big book studies, simply because in knowing the information, it's really worthless unless you apply it. Mm-hmm. Work and applying principles, and you know, this isn't necessarily in our minds a study. It would be so much more effective in participating and having an experience than a teaching and a learning kind of thing. So,
I'm sorry. I'm going to let Bill take us through the circle and triangle, but before we do that, we didn't really say any sort of prayer to bring us into this thing. I'll probably have handouts of this next week, but what I'd like to do is to just center us. And I use this prayer at the beginning of any time that I start back at step one. And it's not in the big book per se, but directives toward it are in the big book in regards to having an open mind and casting aside old ideas. And around the fellowship or the little pockets of enthusiasms that we've come into contact with and all the great speaker tapes that are out there nowadays, people affectionately call it the set-aside prayer. So if we could, I'd like to say that. And then next week, once I have the handouts for everyone, we can all say it together. But I'll just say it now, and if we could just go into that quiet place within and kind of get centered and see what happens. Dear God, please set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, in all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help us see the truth.
The circle and triangle, for me, is very important. I guess, for those of you that don't know, like 7 or 8 years ago, the circle and triangle was taken off of our literature. From the 50s until the early 90s, the circle and triangle was on all of our literature and all of our books. And this is what Bill Wilson said. This is a talk he gave at the 20th anniversary convention of AA in 1955, which is the second international convention that we had. He stood at a podium, and behind him was a curtain, and on the curtain was a circle and triangle, and this is what he said. He said, "Above us we see a banner, and that banner shows a circle, which is AA circumscribing the world. Within it is a triangle. The base of the triangle is the foundation of recovery on which we stand. The left of the triangle symbolizes our unity, and the right of the triangle, our armor of service. Such is the symbol of AA. I first saw it in Norway in 1950, but this symbol is not new with us. We have attributed a particular significance to it, but in actuality, its significance is very old. Students of ancient days tell that centuries ago, it was regarded by priests and witch doctors alike as a symbol by which evil spirits could be kept away. And may that symbol ever stand guard over the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you can see that Bill felt strongly about the circle and triangle. And for me, there's a few things that are important about it. First of all, for the 3.5 years that I was just in the fellowship of AA, slowly getting more miserable, I really thought don't drink and go to meetings was AA's solution to alcoholism. I saw that there were steps. I really didn't think they applied to me. I heard certain things at meetings. It wasn't necessarily the norm. And I also saw certain people that had that sort of comfortable look in their eye, but I really couldn't relate to it, and I didn't know how they could have gotten that way, and they were probably just born that way anyway, and all the other stuff just didn't apply to me. I never saw the reason to move in the direction of taking steps or trying to seek a higher power or anything like that. And somebody sat me down and started by talking about the circle and triangle and pointed out to me that AA's solution to alcoholism has three parts. That the base of the triangle, which is recovery, which is the 12 steps, and the left side of the triangle, which is unity, which is the fellowship, and in the fellowship there's 12 traditions, and on the right side of the triangle is service, which is the giving back not only in AA but also in all of our affairs. And coincidentally, that also has 12 principles associated with it called the 12 concepts. Also, as an ancient symbol, the circle and triangle was not new with us. A long time ago, the circle and triangle represented body, mind, and soul together as one or wholeness. And body, mind, and spirit are the full essence of being human. And our disease is threefold, where it's physical, mental, and spiritual. Our solution is physical, mental, and spiritual. And that not only was it important for me to realize that AA's solution to alcoholism had three parts, but I also needed to ask myself, am I involved in all three parts? It's kind of interesting because at that time, my answer would have been, well, I'm only partially involved in service because every once in a while I'll make coffee or I'll put a chair away. I'm definitely not working any kind of a program, but I go to meetings regularly, so I was really only using less than half of the three parts. And in seeing that there are three parts and I need to be involved in all three parts, it was also described as sort of like a three-legged stool, that if I have all three legs, that stool is solid and I probably would fall over. But as soon as I remove one of those legs or both or two of those legs, that there's a really good chance that I'm going to fall over or I'm going to fall down. Also, I personally, since describing about the circle and triangle and talking with people who have relapsed, I've met people that were only working one part of the triangle that went back out. I know people that were only using two parts of the triangle that went back out, but I have never once ever met somebody who was involved in all three parts of the triangle that went back out and that relapsed. So, for me, that's really important because, you know, in talking to people who relapse, you inevitably talk to them in those in that way, and they'll tell you where they fell short. You know, either they stopped going to meetings. You know, I've known people that were heavily involved in going to a lot of meetings and involved in service, but was very much lacking in recovery. They went back out, and I know people who were heavily involved in, you know, service and heavily involved in you know, working a program, but stopped going to meetings, and they, you know. I've known people that have done less than all three parts in all of its aspects or all of its combinations that went back out, but I've never known anybody that had all three. So for me, first of all, it was important to realize that I need to be in, to realize that there are three parts to the solution. But just as importantly is I need to ask myself regularly, which I'm going to identify now after I finish, you know, see and ask myself, am I involved in all three parts? And how I'm involved in all three parts today right now, currently, is that I go to probably 3 or 4 meetings a week. Thursdays, and I guess now Wednesdays, I'm involved in a big book study group. Thursdays, there's 4 women that I've been taking through the big book, and we just got up to the 4th step. So that's been going on for probably about 2 months. A couple weekends ago, we did a study in Allentown. I write articles about recovery and about the 12 steps and about spirituality. Pretty much every day I talk to somebody in recovery. In regard to service, I guess that's a little bit of the service thing too, but I'm on the Area 44 Convention Committee. I'm on the Garden State Young People's Conference of AA, whose conference is in a few weeks, by the way. And in regard to the program, again, last year we went through the steps again and finished up around October. I live in 10, 11, and 12. I guess you had mentioned about prayer and meditation. I guess about a half hour is what I do, too. There's a couple things that I do. I don't necessarily do it the same way every time, but I do something for probably about 50 minutes or more every morning. I have a watch that beeps every hour, and I try to kind of quiet myself for maybe a minute when the watch beeps every hour to just kind of acknowledge God. And I try to do an evening review every night. I have a really solid support group of people that not only love me, but call me on my shit. I'm not really a big fan of being surrounded by yes men. I would rather somebody get in my face about something than them to not want to open their mouth. And don't get me wrong, I don't like being berated, but I encourage people to speak their mind. You know, the feeling, it's kind of a mutual thing that, you know, I give people spiritual license, and, you know, if I see something, I don't hesitate to speak my mind. And I guess that's kind of where I am in a circle and triangle.
You know, Bill knows a lot more about the history of AA than I do, but what I do know is that in what I call the pioneering days, the members back then actually went through, I won't say 12 steps, because up until the book was written, they were still using the 6 Oxford Group tenets, which had everything in it, well, mostly everything in it that our 12 steps have today. But they went through that recovery program of that time, in many cases, before they're even allowed to go to a meeting, to an AA meeting. A lot of hospital work was done at that time. So they were getting 12-stepped in the hospital, and if we read some, the thing that I love about the story section and what I focus on is the early stories, the pioneer section. And inevitably, 3 days in the hospital, Bill D. took his 3rd step. You know, Bill Wilson was, he did the equivalent of our first 8 steps in the hospital in Towns Hospital with Ebby within a week. You know, Dr. Bob was making amends, and he had just come off a drunk, what, like 24 hours previous. So my point is that in the early days, when this book came out, they brought him to recovery before they brought him to the fellowship. So it stands true that recovery is the base of the triangle. Recovery is the foundation of our 3-part program. But when I came in, I kind of came in through the unity or through the unity aspect of it in regards to meetings. And I guess I was a little more fortunate than Bill, because Bill said he spent 3.5 years in the fellowship before working the steps. And I was here only 5.5 months before I knew that I was going to either die or drink or both. And I had to do something. And I was fortunate enough to hear at least a few people in the town that I got sober, and they were talking about the steps. So I got busy somewhere around 4.5, 5.5 months. But still, it was the fellowship that brought me to the program recovery. And I had probably been doing some type of service before I even started working the steps. Where am I currently? I guess I match up comparatively with Bill. Like he said, we went through the steps again last summer. I wrote an inventory, I would say, between... by the way, when we go back through the steps, as we're going to find out through this work group, you'll hear a lot of people say, well, I started back at inventory. I started back at the fourth step. I don't do that. I start at the beginning. I start at the first step, and I get current with my first step. And I go on through, and I do a review of the first three steps, and then I get into inventory. So we wrote inventory, and... we're going to find out in the fifth step that the book suggests that we share our fifth step with a person or persons. So I like to do what's called multiple fifth steps today, where I'll read my inventory to anywhere from 3 to 5 individuals. And I believe I did 4 steps off that inventory from the summer. For the first time, I did a fifth step with a member of the clergy, and that was a new experience for me, a really, really powerful experience. Matter of fact, Bill talked about a weekend that we did last October, and typically we start on a Friday evening whenever we do any type of big book weekend, and that Friday morning, I had done a fifth step with priest called Father Leo, and you want to talk about getting pumped up for a weekend. And I did a couple other fifth steps besides that, and 6 and 7, 8 step list. Didn't really have many amends off of that inventory, but of course now that you guys have costed me money, I can't say that I'm current on all my amends. So I'm going to take care of that one. But currently, I'm having a really new, awesome, powerful, broadening and deep experience with steps 10 and 11. I guess up until... taking a guess here, up until probably about 4 years ago, I hadn't really done much work with the 10th and 11th step. I mean, I probably took them off the wall, and I did the best I could with what I had. And I prayed, and I read from conference-approved literature every morning. I didn't know anything in the way of meditation. I just didn't know. Unfortunately, we really don't hear a lot of meditation mentioned meetings that we go to. But I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago that I really began to try to practice meditation. And it's probably only about 2.5, maybe 3 years tops now that I've had a daily meditation practice. And what I mean is that upon awakening in the morning, I say a couple of prayers. I come downstairs, I sit in the living room, sit in my easy chair, and I have a couple pieces of literature that I read. Bill and I are basically, we were mad dogs when it came to drinking, so we're mad dogs for spirituality now. And we're into all kinds of stuff. Christianity, Buddhism, Zen, Taoist stuff, just all different kinds of stuff. But this year, I felt it necessary to focus on one thing. And particularly for me, I found it necessary to focus on, let's say, one spiritual teacher. And this one spiritual teacher has a lot of books and a lot of tapes. So I'm focused with this one particular guru, if you will. So I use his writings. And,
who is that?
I can share that afterwards if you want. He's kind of a... Anyway.
Very heavy.
So when I'm all done with my readings, I set a timer. Currently, I meditate twice a day for 25 minutes a day. You know, again, it wasn't even until a few months ago that I even knew how to breathe properly. And I'm currently working with watching the gap in between each breath. And I've been doing a lot of work with what I call the tools of the 10th step. Stuff like watch, pause. Just to be able to watch your thought life is an incredible thing. I've been playing around with this analogy lately where I ask people, and maybe you can kind of answer this question in your mind if you want. I'll ask somebody, if you're sitting in a movie theater and on the screen appears this guy and he appears to be looking at you and he says, "You're a jackass," would you argue with that guy? Would you get into an argument with that guy? Would you fight that guy? And typically the response that I get back is, no, of course not. That's ludicrous. That's ridiculous. It's a waste of time and effort, and it's not even based on reality. And my response to that is, you're absolutely right. Now think about what you do with your thought life. When a thought, before having had a spiritual awakening, when a thought would come into my mind, I would think that I was that thought. And I would get involved in that thought. And I would live that thought. And, you know, if Daria was to say, "Mike, you're a jerk," I would tend to believe that. And I would become attached to that thought. Or, I guess a better way to describe it would be, if a thought comes into my head, "Oh, Mike, you're a big fat slob. You can't lose weight, you know, and you're bouncing up and down and blah, blah, blah." What I do now today is I watch that thought. I stay in this present moment and I just watch that thought and I don't judge it. And that's the most important thing I can say about that is I don't judge my thought life. And I just kind of watch it go by. And I say to myself, that's interesting. And I turn my thoughts over to someone that I can be helpful towards. And quite often for me today, this thing that we call a mind, this mechanism that's in our head, is just like a giant movie screen to me. I fall short. Of course I do. But we have tools to clean that stuff up with. So if there's one tool that I'm really big on now and that I'm really working with, I would say it's watch, which is actually from our 10th step, because it says continue to watch for resentment and selfishness and dishonesty and fear. I go to anywhere from 2 to 4 meetings a week. Like Bill, I'm constantly on the phone with people or sending emails. Unfortunately, very fortunate that my wife Kathy is also in the fellowship and works the program, so we're constantly bouncing things off of each other.
What you call Kathy?
Yeah. I would say the bulk of the service work I do is working with other alcoholics and doing stuff like this. There were a few years during my sobriety where I was on the committees and within the district and within the area and stuff like that. And I guess it's been a couple of years now. I've just really got guided to go back to the basics. And, you know, God made real clear to me about 2 years ago, Mike, where you need to be is on your couch working one-on-one with another drunk. And that's pretty much where I stay. I guess that's where I'm at as far as the circle and triangle is concerned.
What do you mean by since you guys are costing me money? I don't understand what that means.
I doubt very much that if it wasn't for this meeting tonight, I probably wouldn't have thought of that event.
Oh, I see what you mean. I didn't realize that was what he meant.
Yeah. I didn't realize. That's not original. We steal everything.
So. No, I didn't realize what he meant.
I got that.
That's not sure what you were talking about.
I know what he's talking about. I don't know what he's talking about, but I know what he's talking about.
You want to get anything else? Yeah, go ahead.
One last thing, which is also just really preliminary, is the last, I think it's the last page in the handout, talks about the table of contents. And the book mentions a few times that this is our basic text. As a matter of fact, it says it on the cover of the paper cover that goes across the hardcover, even though it doesn't say it anywhere else, that, you know, this is the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous. And since it's a text, in keeping with other texts, it's not like a novel. It's not like an informational kind of a book. A text assumes that the reader knows nothing about the subject and starts with certain basic information and then builds upon that. So like a math textbook will begin with addition and subtraction and then go into multiplication and division, and then, you know, maybe by the fifth chapter it starts getting into algebra and stuff like that. That's why... I remember when I first came in, on more than one occasion, people had said to me, you know, if you want to know how it works, read chapter 5, because that's called How It Works. And chapter 5 begins with the third step, and there's 60-something pages before that that get us to reach the conclusions of the first two steps and explain to us, you know, what's powerlessness, what's unmanageability, why is it saying that we're insane, which I never really understood until I started studying it. And so... You know, I never knew why I had to seek God, and I wasn't insane. In reading chapter five, it was like not knowing anything about math and trying to figure out algebra. So in seeing that it's a basic that it's our basic text and how a text is set up where it builds upon itself, the book is written in a very specific way. As a matter of fact, for me, it's the ultimate 12-step technique. And it starts by telling us the problem, which is in the doctor's opinion. It also touches upon the problem in other chapters, but the doctor's opinion is probably the best place in describing what the problem is. Then Bill's story is an example of the problem. And there is a solution that gives us a little bit of a history and starts getting into what the solution is, which is the higher power. Then in more about alcoholism, it gives us the futility of trying to deal with alcoholism without the solution. And then we agnostics, it gives us a solution that we can live with. It gives us some basic principles about seeking this higher power and how we can have our own concept of a higher power of our own understanding, and gives us some basic principles. And then in How It Works and the subsequent chapters before the stories, how to have that higher power working in our lives and through us. I've actually had debates with my old sponsor about he believes that the solution to alcoholism is God, and I usually argue with him about that because I believe there is a God, and there's lots of people that don't have any kind of a solution to alcoholism, that I believe that the solution to alcoholism is God working in and through you, and there's a big difference between the two in my mind. You know, those chapters are how to get that power to be working, you know, in through us, to remove the blocks to what prevents that power from bringing about a solution to our alcoholism, because if we continue to run the show and if we continue to harm and resent and be filled with fear, kind of what you were talking about, that, you know, if a resentment's telling me what to do, then God can't be. And if fear's telling me what to do, then my inner voice, knowing that this is the wrong thing to do, isn't going to stop me from doing it because fear's going to tell me what to do. Again, the book is set up in a very specific way where it starts with the problem. And it's interesting because after Bill got sober December 11th, 34, he didn't meet Dr. Bob until Mother's Day, 35, so that was about 6 months later. For those 6 months, he worked with lots of drunks, and he went to the hospital constantly, and he tried working with people, and he wasn't getting anybody else sober, but he was keeping himself sober. And one day, Dr. Silkworth, who wrote the doctor's opinion, kind of stopped him in the hall, and Bill was like, you know, I don't understand it. I can't seem to be able to help anybody. And Dr. Silkworth said, Bill, you know, you're trying to shove this religious experience or spiritual experience down people's throats. Why don't you start by telling them what your drinking was like, and why don't you talk to them about alcoholism first, and let them see that you were where they are and that you're no longer there. Then they'll be interested in seeking the spiritual solution after they realize that you know what you're talking about and you can relate to where they are. And that coincidentally, the very next person that Bill worked with was Dr. Bob, and using that technique worked. And that's why the book is set up the way it is. We start with the problem, and then it eases us into a solution, and then the practical program of recovery to bring about that solution working in our life. So I like talking about the table of contents too, because again, it's the ultimate 12 step as far as I'm concerned in how it's set up and how it goes along. Another thing that's cool about how the book is written is that Bill says the same stuff over and over and over again, but he uses different words. And that's classic technique because, you know, being a thick-skulled alcoholic, sometimes a certain description of something, I don't get it, but then I hear it a different way and then I get it. Or I didn't get it the second time and I hear it the third time and then I finally get it, you know what I mean? And it finally sinks in. So, you know, in the technique that Bill used was to just kind of say the same things but use different words, and you kind of finally get the picture. So the book is set up in a very specific way, and it's a very effective tool.
I guess the last thing I want to say, and then we'll wrap it up, and the format that we want to stick to typically is Bill and I talk for the first hour and then open it up to you guys for the last half hour. But since we kind of had some dialogue back and forth, almost at the end of the 90 minutes. When Bill and I do, I guess this became real strong to us about a year ago, that a good way to go through a weekend, when we're not going to do it this way now, but when we go through a weekend now, we like to start with the 12 step, because it's kind of a way to 12-step the group that's present, if you will. And we like to start with Chapter 7, Working with Others, because there's specific and clear-cut directions in there on how to make a 12-step call. That, again, it's just one of those things that we're not hearing a lot about in meetings this day, these days. One of the ways that I 12-step, a couple of years ago, I started getting a lot of people coming to me and asking me to go through to work with them, to go through the big book. By the way, if there's any lingo that Bill and I use that you're not familiar with, just ask us. When I say go through to work, I mean start at the beginning of the big book and go all the way through the first 164. That's what I mean by going through to work. There's some people that say, well, the real work of Alcoholics Anonymous isn't until the 12th step, and that's fine too. This is just the lingo that I like to use. But a couple of years ago, I started getting a lot of people come to me and say, yeah, I want to go through the steps. Will you take me through? And of course, I said, yeah. You know, we got started, and some of them, you know, pooped out in the beginning, or you know, I wouldn't hear from them anymore once they got into inventory. Or for those that got through inventory and fifth steps, I wouldn't see them anymore once they got into their ninth step. And so I have a friend of mine who actually has been probably one of the biggest influences on me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he lives in Texas, and I called him a couple of years ago, and I explained this to him. And he gave me a little technique that he uses, and I've been doing it ever since. When someone comes to me and asks me to be their sponsor, to take them through to work, I don't agree to that right away. I do agree to sit down with them and spend some time to them, spend some time with them. And what I do over about a 20 or 30 minute time period is I do exactly what Chapter 7 tells us to do. I talk about my drinking. I get them to talk about some of their drinking. I dwell on the hopeless feature of alcoholism. And then I outline the program of action. And I tell them what I did with the 12 steps. But more specifically, I give them a little outline or a little synopsis of each step. And I start with the first step and I go all the way through. And I don't soft sell the fourth step. I let them know that we're going to do three specific inventories on resentments, fears, and harms, with emphasis on my sexual conduct. I let them know that we're going to write a sex ideal. And I don't soft sell that fourth step. And when it comes to the ninth step, I let them know that you will pay the money back and you will make all the amends of all the people that you can find. And if you have amends that need to be made to people who are deceased, we can make amends to those people also, to their spirits. And I go all the way through. And I don't soft sell any of it, because I sit them down. I have them go back home, actually, because typically after that, they're like, yeah, this is what I want. This is the work I want to do. Let's start now. And I'll go anywhere from 24 to 72 hours, and I'll let them just think about it. One of the things we'll be talking about over the weeks is the path of consideration. And I'll let them consider whether that this is really the work that they want to do. And I'll have them go home and open up to page 59, where the 12 steps are, and have them read each step. And for each step, I specifically ask them two questions so that they can ask themselves. First question is this the work that I want to do? Is this the work that you want to do with each step? And the second question is, are you willing to go to any lengths to do this? And they already know what any lengths is, because I just got done telling them it's the 12 steps. It's not standing on your head in a corner somewhere. It's not prancing in the middle of traffic in your boxer shorts. It's nothing like that.
Huh?
No. We can do that after the meeting if you want.
You're not going to shave our head or make us retire.
That's the jaywalker. It's in the book, the jaywalker. What are you talking about?
We're not supposed to do that behavior anymore. You know, and depending on how bad they are, if they just can't string any days together at all, I'll have them get back to me the next day. But if they've been around for a while, I'll say, you know, sit with that for 72 hours, and then I'll have them get back to me. And then we can start from there. I hate to use this expression, but that tends to weed out the dead weight. And I don't mean that in a negative way. But if I'm wasting my time and their time with someone who really isn't interested in going all the way through, then I'm not only wasting their time and my time, but I could be depriving another drunk that really wants to get well. So that's been working with me, for me. So over the next week, I'd like you to kind of sit with those two questions. Open up to page 59. Read each step. And as you read each step, ask yourself, is this the work that I want to do? And am I willing to go to any lengths to do it?
Another reason why we like starting with working with others is because not only do we want to learn how to work the steps ourselves, but we also like passing along to other people, how do I take somebody else through the steps? So we like starting there, because it talks about kind of making the approach. And then when we go back to the beginning of the book, as we go through word by word through the chapters, if that's the way we end up doing it, we'll also point out in those chapters where it talks about how to 12-step somebody. So it's sort of a two-angled kind of thing of, yeah, how do I work the steps, but also how do I help somebody else work the steps? So that was kind of where some of that was coming from as well.
Something that just came to me about 10 minutes ago is that when we close every week, I think whoever wants to, we can, I mean, AA meetings we typically close with the Lord's Prayer. And if everyone agrees that, you know, one person can volunteer or whatever, and close with whatever prayer that you want to close with. And let's just keep it loose like that, and we'll see what happens. We'll see you all next week. Anybody want to say the prayer for this week?
I have it written down.
In your book.
Dear God, please help me. Lord, please renew my anger for your sin and vengeance. Please replace the room better than the life you have. Patience and honor is not a plan for my life. Thank you for the fact that you love me and want the best for me. Trust in you that you will provide what I need if I can close to you and provide the Lord as well. Help me to be honest with myself and my love, and let me know what happens to me so that I